Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and I'm here with a very special guest star and a friend of mine, David Ullman, as he returns to the show. Welcome, David.
Yes, how are you, Chris?
Oh, can't complain. Busy, busy times, but you know how that goes.
Yep. At least you're busy. That's a good thing.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It depends a little bit. It's still in the production phases, so hopefully it all comes together eventually.
Of course.
So tell us, last we set off, obviously you were doing very, very many things, including your own production at the time, I do believe, House at the End of the Drive. So update us on what's been going on in David's life.
God, since then, still, you know, just trying to get the film out there, working on a documentary about the my story. I'm writing a book about the house and my experiences here because people said, write a book. It'll make it a lot easier for people to grab hold of the story and then, you know, and intellectualize it. And I said, you know, that's something I was asked for many years ago to do, and I haven't. And I said, you know, I think I'll look into that. And that's what I've been doing. I stopped doing the paranormal investigations here last August. Got a lot of from the experiences we've had here, which has just been great. I mean, stuff that people just to this day go, why do you live there still? And I said, because what am I going to do, run? I said, if there are ghosts, they're going to be around wherever you go. And as a matter of fact, there are ghosts everywhere. I just happen to have a place that's a, let's call it a ghost flop house. And that's because I have such extremely elevated EMF levels here, naturally occurring present in the house. So, excuse me, it's a lot different in some respects, but in a lot of respects, every place that you can go is haunted on the earth. And what I mean is that if somebody was there before you, lived there, played there, worked there, you know, et cetera, there, you know, they're going to come back when they, from the dead, just to hang out there because it's a familiar spot to them if they're ghosts. So that's really what it's, what I've seen and noticed about the, you know, the paranormal. I just happen to have a lot of spirits. You know, when people come here, we bring in spirits with them. And that's what happens. There's just a lot of activity because of that.
Well, your house, I like to explain your house along with other places like Post Town from time to time and a few other locations that I've been to. Well, I haven't been to yours yet, but eventually you and I will sit out and have a steak somewhere along the line. I like to call them conduits a lot of, in a way. If you think about it, we as humans don't like to be alone. So when we pass away, if we find out that there's an area where other spirits are, it would be just like in life. I mean, you have to have your moments when you're alone, but you also want to be around people. And if you see a group of people all together, hey, why not be a part of it?
Exactly. You know, it's kind of like here when I, as I said, people that have come to the house to visit, you know, brought their own spirits and stuff for those spirits, they hit this environment and they start doing their thing and people go, what's that? And it's like, oh my God, I just heard my grandma's voice. It was like, yeah. I said, what'd you say? She just said, hi, honey. And I said, okay. Are you okay with that? He goes, well, I thought, you know, I was like, well, you thought wrong. You thought you were going to see somebody that you didn't know. I said, somebody that you knew came and visited you. That's what's going to happen. It's not going to be somebody that you're, I'm a big fan of such and such. I said, it just doesn't work like that. So that's what I've noticed what goes on here at the house.
Well, to me, that makes perfect sense. And a lot of people, I know, you know as well as I do, when you get into the paranormal, a lot of times that people are thrill seekers and they're fun seekers and so forth. So they go to these locations expecting those famous names or those particular situations or so forth. But once you learn to live with it, a lot of times it doesn't quite end up that way. It ends up with a conglomeration of different spirits or ghosts or whatever you want to call them that sometimes they just kind of come and go when they wish, or like you said, they're tagging along with somebody else and they finally decided, okay, well, you know, there seems to be something here and everybody else is listening. Maybe I can communicate once in my existence to people I love and so forth. It's not necessarily the way it's pictured on TV and in the media. A lot of times it comes out differently when you actually become a part of it.
Well, yeah, once you experience it, you're like saying, oh, my God, that's not what happened on television or in the movies. And it's like, really? Do you ever think that maybe, just possibly maybe, what was in the movie was just that? It was part of a story, a fictitious account. It's not real. It's their interpretation of what they want to, you know, what they wish to convey to the audience. And most of that stuff, let's be honest, has got to be dramatic, has got to be horrifying, has got to be debauched, has got to be disgusting, disparaging, you know, gut-wrenching. Why? Because it sells. It's as simple as that. That's the thing about living in, you know, in the environment that I live in with all the activity. And, you know, you go to my YouTube channel and you see stuff that happens and you go, oh my God, it goes, it's not that scary. And it's like, no, for the most part, when you really look at it from all the experiences I've had in the past 16 years living here, it's not bad. It's just, in a sense, in a way of, it's a way of communicating. And what I mean by that is, figure these spirits have limited capacity to communicate. Each one has a limitation of some sort or another. And what I mean is it's not very easy for them to materialize as a spirit, because I've only seen, in the time I've lived here, one apparition, full body apparition, and that was Jay Sebring some 14 years ago. But the idea is that they will do something in some cases in an innocuous fashion, like knock something over. And most recently, about 3 weeks ago, I had this girl who, you know, rang me up from UCLA as a student and as a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. She wanted to see if she could come up here with some friends. And I said, sure. And so they came up here. It was going to be like 20 minutes. And they ended up staying for like 3 hours. And we were walking around the house. And we ended up on the third level. And we were just sitting there talking. And one of the guys... one of the girls had put their camera, their phone, on the big speaker, and it was leaning up against the football helmet there. And we were all talking, and it was just sitting there for about 25 minutes, and this guy got up and walked right by it. And when I say by it, I mean he was about a foot and a half away from where it was sitting. And he didn't make contact, and the floors aren't like, as we say, it's not like the floors here are so wobbly that if you step on one spot, you're going to actually make a loose board, knock the speaker, and have it knock over. So he walked by the phone as it was recording, and it just, on its own, got knocked over. And we're all watching, and it's all in the security cameras that are in the room captured it, and I zoomed in and cropped it, and I put it on YouTube. And it's an amazing piece of footage, because you have two different angles of this guy walking by this, you know, the area where the phone was on top of this like 4-foot-tall speaker. It's an old speaker. It's an old studio monitor speaker that I've had for a number of years, and it's down there. And it weighs a good... 75 pounds. And it's solid as a rock sitting flat on the ground. So when he walked by it, literally it got knocked over. We watched the camera A and then camera B. It's like, whoa, he didn't touch it at all. It just, it was like saying, hello, we're here. because we were not we were just, as a matter of fact, in the footage that led up to it, the conversation was, well, you know, she said, what happens to the spirits? Does it always happen? I said, you know, it doesn't happen when you expect it, when you least expect it. It happens. I said, you know, they're not like going, oh, yeah, oh, they're here, let's start doing this and that. It's like, no, it's not like that at all. And then, like 10 seconds, within 5 seconds, the guy walks by and the camera gets knocked over. And we were just talking about the randomness of the activity in the house. You don't know when. It's not like I've got a watch. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and cue spirits. It's not like that. It just happens randomly. And, you know, Sylvester Stallone was here about 2 weeks ago to see with the house and with his brother, Frank, who's a friend of mine I've known for 15 years. And Frank didn't want to come up here because of the proximity of the house to the Sharon Tate murders. And while he was here, you know, Frank's mother and Sylvester and Frank's mom is Jackie Stallone, and she's a famous, you know, clairvoyant, so to speak. And I was, like, interested to see if anything was going to happen when they came over, because I'd love to have their mother come over, but their mother is a little bit, you know, I don't know. I'll have to ask them next time I speak to Frank to see if he wants to invite his mom to come to check out the house. That would be classic, to get Jackie to come up and check out the house and see what she gets on it. So it would be interesting, but nothing happened. They were here to see my boxing collection and some of my Jack Johnson memorabilia that I've got, a little, you know, some of the stuff I've got in my personal collection. And it was funny because we ended up talking for like an hour and a half. It was only going to be 20 minutes. And Sylvester goes and looks and goes, holy shit. It goes, it's late. Because I got to get out of here. Because I'm going to get to this meeting. And I said, well, it was nice meeting you again. He said, we'll talk. And he goes, no. He goes, we'll talk later. It's like, good. I said, and that was that. But nothing happened. Not a thing happened. And I thought, you know, if we're looking for the spirits, they make themselves known. When we're not looking for the spirits, they lay low and don't have any interest in interacting unless there's some pressing issue with them where they need to reach out to me or the person that's here at the moment they're here to let them know that there's something going on. And it was so funny because we went through the whole house and I said, well, Frank, I said, is the house haunted? And he goes, oh, I don't know. I goes, well, you were afraid? He goes, no, because of the Sharon Tate murders. And I said, well, he goes, the house is fine. And it was like, it took 15 years and his brother to come over here, finally for Frank to come to the house to check it out. But what's funny is that, you know, when you think about, you know, people's when these people came here from UCLA 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and they were looking for the ghosts, the spirits, you know, decided, it's like, well, when they're not thinking about looking for us, we'll let something happen that's really cool. And they did, and it was like, it made these kids night. And that's what's interesting about the paranormal to me. It's not scary. It's not trying to hurt me. I don't feel threatened. I've never felt any threat from the paranormal, from the spirits here. You can't feel threatened from the paranormal, but I don't feel threatened by the spirits, the ghosts. I feel fine. I feel great. You know, it'll be interesting because Quentin Tarantino wants to shoot a couple of days up here on the street for his movie. And I look forward to meeting him someday soon so he can come in the house and check out the house, etc., for the paranormal activity that he's undoubtedly going to experience when he does come up here. I can't wait. I really look forward to it. I'm just like giddy just to see what all happens. If anything does happen with the paranormal, with the making of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, I hear he's pretty fascinated with the paranormal world from some of the interviews he's done. So,
if that's the case, then let me say this to any of your viewers. Get in touch with him and tell him to get in touch with me, because I know that he's reached out to Scott Michaels for some insight into the backstory of the Sharon Tate murders. And if no one knows, Scott Michaels is with Dearly Departed Tours and the Dearly Departed Museum, where he has actually Jane Mansfield's Electra, Buick Electra that she was, you know, that she unfortunately died in, is actually there at the museum, and I've seen it. I was there for the grand opening night, and I was like, oh my God, that's the freaking Buick Electra that was just the wreck that she was killed in, and it's there. And there's just plenty of other fascinating pieces. And look, if you're in LA and you really want to see some very interesting pieces, you know, and you don't need to go to Vegas to go to the haunted collection of let's just not give him any open plugs. But you know the place I'm talking about. You know, so if you can come down to LA and you can see some really interesting things, because like I said, that car is right up there with the Bonnie and Clyde death car. When you talk about motor vehicles that are really synonymous with a terrible tragedy, and it's there, and it's just like, oh my God, I will say this, it is definitely, if there's a piece of auto, you know, auto memorabilia that's got some energy to it. I touched it and I was like going, oh, wow, it's hot. It's got some energy to it. It's got, you know, some energy to it. I will just leave you with that.
Well, you brought up some interesting points, though, that I think a lot of people don't know. And one of them is, ghosts don't come on command. Spirits don't come on command, just like human beings don't, really, if you think about it. If they want to interact, they interact. If they don't want to interact, they don't interact. And if nothing's going on in a home that's important, why would they interact?
Right.
And the other thing that you brought up, I think a lot of people and I just had this conversation actually with Dean Tremblay from True North Paranormal on a personal conversation, is multiple camera angles. A lot of people go out there with one camera and they don't realize that a lot of times catching things like what you caught, the easiest way to not only prove it but to look at it in the long run and be able to decipher it is if you have multiple camera angles. The more cameras you have
to. I will tell you right now, I'll tell you an experience that happened here that will put this in perspective of what you were talking about. Now, mind you, my house is laden with cameras, so most people don't pay attention. I have a few that are on tripods. Most are the same color as the paint and are mounted on the wall and are high def with infrared lights built in. And I have a couple of infrared lights around the house to, you know, double explode the energy, the light exposure through the whole house. It's all lit up, so there's no shadows and stuff that can't be, you know, can be disqualified as fake. But we have two cameras in the third level guest bedroom and two cameras in the third level theater room from both different angles, not the same angle, mind you. And we had an occasion where we had some people here and three guys from a paranormal, radio show, and they were also ghost hunters, whatever. And they came here, and I don't remember their name, and I wouldn't mention their names if I did because it would be an unsolicited bad plug for them. But they came here and they said to me, oh, you know, we were downstairs in the third level theater room and one of the door shut going to the theater, to the guest bedroom. And I said, it did. He goes, on its own. It's like, okay. So we looked at the first camera. So from the first camera angle, you look down onto the room from the entryway and it looked like the door on its own shut on its own from fully open. Look at the camera that's across the room that shoots from the floor looking towards the door entryway. We see the guy's friend with his foot just gently push the door shut. And the other two guys I took the other two guys into my office and we watched, review the footage, and it was as clear as a bell. I said, I said, well, I found the source of the, what caused the door to shut on its own. He goes, yeah, what's this? I said, well, look at this camera. I said, yeah, see? He goes, oh, there's no, yes, it looks like it's going on its own. So then I set it up. I said, yeah, well, here's the reveal. I said, look at the floor. And we zoomed in and you could see the guy's foot pushing, you know, kicking the door shut. And I said, that's your friend kicking the door shut. Now, I do not and will not allow that to be construed and considered, and I don't want you to put that out there that you were hearing the door shut on its own, because it didn't. I said, I have too much, you know, I have too much credibility at risk for you guys to make a statement that's, and I can prove that it's false. And I said, it wouldn't do very well for you guys. So that's basically what it was.
That's a good piece of respect, though, and that's something that people in the paranormal community don't see a lot, too. A lot of people watch the shows and understand that people like yourself, people like Daryl, and a half a dozen people that have locations across the United States of America have teams come in and get a little bit of exposure on their haunted area, but they don't realize the respect that most of you have in the fact that hey, look, it's got to be 100% genuine. You don't want to throw something out there that can be bad press on them, bad press on you. You just want to be forthright and honest about it. You know, this is what I live with every day, and this is what I want to show you.
Exactly. Because that's what it is. And that's a lot of people have come here with intentions of trying to debunk it, and they come up, as we say, less than happy, because the stuff that happens is so much more personal. They're like, well, are you serious? It's like, yes. I said, yes, that's what happens. And then they end up running out of here, and then they bitch and moan and they scream. I mean, look what happened with Zach Baggins, who I regret ever letting come here in the first place, because I had so much, problems with his take on it, and still to this day ringing out with it. Because it's like he said that, you know, I'm possessed, and the stuff that befell him, you know, going back to the show, which was shot 4 years ago, they ended up having problems with the fact that he ran out of here after 3 hours, and he got messed up here more than any other place, more than the Demon House ever and all that BS. And I truly believe that part of what, you know, when he bought the Demon House was basically because he wanted to put a positive spin on himself and his whole cred by taking away what the hell happened here at my house. And the stuff that befell him in 2000, it's now 5 years, he was here in 2013 when he shot the episode in September. But, there was a lot of bad publicity about it because he ran out of here in 3 hours of a 6-hour lockdown. I was raising stink about it, saying, look, I was doing my investigations for publicity's sake. I said, look, come to the place that Zach Baggins could only manage spending 3 hours of a 6-hour lockdown. And I was unabashed about it. I was really like, let's just say I was playing it up. Because I figured, you know, and we had a little bit of a Twitter battle going on. Little did I know that this is a practice he has been doing for a long time, that he goes to a place, he ends up having some kind of a conflict with the individuals there, a small one, and when he leaves, he starts to badmouth the individuals that are there, such as Bloody Mary. She called me up after my episode came on, and she said, did he start to badmouth you afterwards? And I said, yeah, I kind of noticed that on Twitter. And she goes, yeah, he did that with me too. And then another person up in Washington in Seattle called me and said they had a really haunted house and that Zach had visited, and he said it wasn't really haunted and blah, blah, blah. And then they said a couple weeks later they had another investigation team come there, and there was huge amounts of paranormal activity with the doors slamming shut and the cabinets opening and dishes being flung across the room. I said, yeah, that's a poltergeist. I said, all a poltergeist is a noisy ghost. I said, in a lot of cases, it's basically responding to the individuals that come into the environment that they're pissed off about, that they don't like. I said, in some cases, it's like when Chris Fleming was here 4 or 5 years ago, we did some EVP work that was recorded while we were doing the session in the laundry room here. And this spirit was recorded. You know, we had a cameraman there shooting it. My friend was shooting this. And I said, Chris, I said, this is how we're going to do it. You're going to go in a room, you're going to do the EVP, ask a question, give them 30 seconds, and you're going to play it right back, you know, immediately. And we're going to record it all in one fell swoop. I said, I can't stand these cockamamie EVPs where they take them. We go home, we reevaluate them, we reassess them, and we process them, and we remodulate. And I go, that's bullshit. I said, I don't want to hear anything but the raw experience when I'm at the moment. So it's like, I want instant gratification, just like my audience does. And to make it the most credible and authentic, we're going to do it right on the spot and play it back for people without going through and processing and heightening and lowering the frequencies and, you know, cleaning it up, as they say. I said, let's hear it raw. So, and you shoot the video of it so that no one can question what was done later on. So the highest integrity, you know, possible. So we go into the laundry room, and Chris is there asking a question, and he said, and the response was this voice said, F you and die. Get out. And this woman said, oh my God, or get the hell out. And this woman said, oh my God, it's a demon. And I said, excuse me. I said, that is not the case. I said, would you think that I was a demon if you heard me tell that to Chris? And she goes, no. I said, so, but you're eavesdropping, aren't you? I said, first of all, you're eavesdropping in the first place, so you don't even know the context under which this comment is being made. I said, secondly, I said, you're projecting upon this situation with a very negative tint. And I said, that's not a good point to take in the second place. Now, in the third place, you back to me what I said is, if it was me saying to Chris, could it possibly be in the context that I'm pissed off at him? And maybe the spirit is just the residue of a personality who's seen and knows Chris because he's been here before several times, going back to Ghost Hunters, that show back in 2006. I said, so maybe, just maybe, this happens to be the fact that the spirit doesn't like Chris. And she stopped and she said, oh my God, you're right. I said, think about things before you go off and shoot your mouth off and say it's a demon and try to apply some simple, basic, sensible, contextual, aforementioned thoughts to it. I said, you can't just sit there and pass judgment without examining it like a private investigator would look at this scene, you know, or a detective or a Sherlock Holmesian type of an attitude towards it. I said, you're trying to solve a mystery. You're not trying to condemn a man to death based upon what he said, or his spirit to damnation, eternal damnation as a devil, because you want to jump to the stupidest conclusion because it's dramatic.
You know, that's something I think a lot of people don't understand. The term investigator. For the past, I would say, about 8 or 9 months, while creating Generation Truth and while working with figuring out what teams so that we could actually show people the real truth and what places to go locally here so that when we branch out and get more funds, we can travel around all over the United States. One thing that really bothers me is the way people sling the term investigator around, but they don't understand what investigation means. Just like you said, people jump to the gun too quickly. You know, a part of being an investigator, whether you're a private investigator, whether you're working for the police, whatever it is, a part of that is getting down to that evidence and breaking it down so that you have the leads that you need and be able to logically explain what's going on. And yeah, I think people lose that a lot of times.
Well, I was a private investigator years ago for a living. I did that, you know. And I also was a kid. But to me, it wasn't just that, doing private investigation. As a kid, I always had a very, very, very unique sense or ability to track people down. I remember, I guess I can tell this story now, it's so many years later. When I was a kid, I was friends with Kim Richards. And this is going back to like kindergarten, first grade shit. She actually lived really close to the school I went to, Bellagio Road School, which has now been converted to a magnet school. But in any event, and her mom, I used to hang out with her and stuff, and I was like one of her only friends because everybody thought that she was a snob and this and that. It's like, I didn't think she was a snob. She's just, you know, an actress. I didn't, you know, it, to me, it was like I knew lots of kids that were people that were actors and actresses as a kid because my godfather was a manager, and there were lots of people that were around my parents that were in the industry. So I didn't really pay much attention to it and put them on a pedestal. So when I met her and we started being friends, it was like we used to hang out. She used to come over. Well, in I think somewhere in the first grade, she got two black eyes and a broken nose. And I just heard a voice said, "She's going to find you and kill you for telling this story." It's like, well, good. You know, I can't wait. Hear from the what she turned into late, you know, after everything else, it doesn't matter. But in the meantime, back to the story at hand. So her mom pulled her from the school, her public school, and basically they sold the house and she went to another school and she basically cut ties with everybody, basically threw the baby out with the bathwater. And I basically was cut off from her and I didn't see her. And no, I wasn't the guy that put the gave her the two black eyes and the broken nose. So she moved and it was like, oh, a few years later, a movie came out, and I saw her in a film called Escape from Witch Mountain. And I was just a kid, and I said, mm-hmm. And I basically said, I got to find out where the hell she's living. I said, it's been a few years. I said, I want to see her and say hi, you know. Well, somehow, I ended up finding out where she moved to. And I don't even know how the hell I managed, but I managed. I don't even, it was like I was a sleuth, and this is pre-internet. This is like when we had mini bikes, okay, and Schwinn's. So I basically found out where she was, found out, again, I still to this day don't remember exactly how I tracked her, found her down, and no, I wasn't stalking her. I actually rode my bike across the mountains in Bel Air, through the fire road up on Upper Linda Flora, across to lower Upper Linda Flora, up across the fire road to Upper Linda Flora, through Chelan, I mean Roscommere, all the way across and down to Casiano Estates, to where she was living. And I actually talked to her sister Kathy, who's the one that's on the Beverly Hills Housewives, who married that doc, whoever it was she married. But she's one, and I talked to her, and I said, "Is your sister home?" She goes, "No, she's not home." I said, "Okay," and I then rode back another like 4 miles back through the mountains home, and it's like I couldn't believe it. It's like that was the first time when I actually was able to use my instincts to track people down, so, and to deduct and figure things out. So the same with the spirits; it was like a natural extension when it came to doing paranormal investigating and doing private investigating. It was all about trying to figure things out and come to a conclusion of how things could be figured out in a way that would benefit everybody. And it was like, okay, I figured this out. I found this person. I found out how to get to this person. I found that person in person and got to them. Because I was also, let's just say, I was also instilled with the ability to do process serving, to serve subpoenas on people that were very, 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 very evasive. And I used my gifts then to also track people down that were supposedly unable to be served by other process servers and that were on the lam. I found them, and then I basically got to serve them papers to appear in court for different things. I got to also serve people like Burt Bacharach, his divorce papers, which was a prearranged deal, which was really nice because when they know you're coming and they invite you into the house and offer you a beverage and decide to play a tune on their big baby grand piano in their Malibu home on the beach, you got to say, you know, I'm doing something right. You know, how many people get to have a song of your choosing of Burt Bacharach's, you know, creations played in front of you? It's like going, oh, that's sick. That was just an amazing thing. It was like, she goes, well, what can I, he goes, can I say, I said, Mr. Bacharach, I had to tell you, I said, I hate doing this. He goes, no, Carol and I had to get this. It's a formality. He goes, can I get you something to drink? It's like, no, I said, I just got to tell you. I said, I am a big fan of yours since Raindrops Keep Falling on the Head from Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. I just love your work. I think you're great and all the work you did with Dionne Warwick and all the other people. And he was like gobsmacked, like was like, seriously? I was like, oh yeah. I said, I think you're the tops. I said, I have always loved you. I said, along with Herb Albert. And he goes, when I said Herb Albert, he goes, you're serious? He goes, oh yeah. He goes, well, come here. And he's like, he was so flattered. He says, what's going to be, and he sat down at the piano. He goes, what, let me play something for you then. It's like, oh shit. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. And this is 20 some odd years ago at least. And I'm like, okay. I said, could you play me? And he played me the whole song. I just sat there. I almost cried. I was like, going, I'm so flattered that he did that for me. And I was like, kick ass, man. So went back to our story about using the detective work and applying things to a rational, calm response to a paranormal incident and not flipping your lid and going, speaking of this, of that which I just did, I hate to subject you to something I hate, which is, you know who, BGAS, you know, whatever the hell, however you must, let's just say Bilbo Baggins' nephew. I watched that video, and I think from the show Ghost Adventures, where he had a nuclear meltdown in my house. Do you remember what I'm talking about? And I'm talking about it on camera, where the figurine gets knocked over. I mean, I got it actually on my computer. If you like, I could probably play it for you guys. I don't, you know, the actual clip, I don't think it's just like 20 seconds. Well, it's a little, it's there. Let's just see if I can find it. It's very funny. I'm sure it would translate well on the thing because it's basically all audio anyways. There's no discussion. It's no like, you know, oh, did you see that? Nothing. The action that happened is explainable by what happens when they say, oh, this is what happened. It goes, oh, really? And I can set up the whole, you know, clip of what took place, and we can play the audio so you can listen to the audio, I should say, of it. It's quite interesting, as a matter of fact. Let me see if I have it here. April. There it is. There it is. So what it was is, he's upstairs with Nick in the top floor, and this is after I've left the house, and they're standing in the corridor, the door jar jam, I guess, between the den and the living room. And there's a, you know, the figurines, as you know, the figurines on top of the aquarium are there, and you know, early in the evening, I showed them that the Beetlejuice figurine got knocked over in front of them, the big one, the heavy one. So in the clip, they show it, and you can watch this on Ghost Adventures. What's his face? I forgot the guy's name. Who's the kid? Jay Wozley's in the van, and they show him in the van, the backseat of the van, pointing as the smoking man gets toppled over. And it's in the darkness. And they're literally about 15 feet away from the aquarium where and upon which the smoking man is standing. And the figurine gets knocked over, and Jay has this, like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And he then gets on the walkie-talkie. Now, between the time the figurine gets knocked over and the time Jay gets on the walkie-talkie and communicates to Zach and Nick that the figurine's got knocked over to see what their response is, it's a good 7 to 10 seconds. And by the time they hear him say that, it's at least 10 seconds. By the time they hear him explain what's happened and they get the wind of what's happened, the figurine's already been knocked over for 10 seconds. And Zach goes nuclear ballistic meltdown. Like, he can't process that the figurine's got knocked over. And I'm like, and Nick's calm as a cucumber, processing, saying, okay, it knocked over 10 seconds ago. He's thinking to himself, yeah, it knocked over 10 seconds ago. We didn't see it. We're in the darkness. Funny thing is he says we didn't hear it. But Zach is not thinking to himself, calmly, respondingly going, you know something? If you got figures, you got knocked over within 15 feet of us 10 seconds ago, how come we didn't hear it? That's almost physically impossible. We're in the house alone. No one's here. The house is dead. Bad joke. Empty, that is. There's no noises. So theoretically, as the old saying goes, if a stone drops in the forest or if a tree falls in the forest, does it still make a sound? Well, of course it does, because it fell and hit the ground. Just because nobody heard it doesn't mean it didn't make a sound. It's part of the law of physics. It had to. It made an impact upon the ground, creating sound waves that were generated. Yes, it made a sound. But he doesn't have that expression of like, wait, what, how did that happen without? He goes to nuclear meltdown. So if you like, with your permission, I'd like to put the my phone on the speakerphone, and I will, you know, put here. I will put you guys on speakerphone and play this clip for you guys, which I've modified slightly. I think I dubbed the, here, listen to it. With your permission, listen to it. It's very funny. It's a minute and 8 seconds long.
We'd love
to hear it.
Yep.
Here. First person you're going to hear is Jay Wasley.
That's something that happens quite a lot in the paranormal. People
I laugh because it's happened to me so many times in this house in front of me. I've literally had it happen right in front of me with the lights on. And I look and I go, okay, what do you guys want? I've had more than one happen in front of me. I've had them fly in front of me across the floor. I was there on the anniversary of the murders. God, what is this? This is 2018. It must have been 2015. No, 16. So 2 years ago. No, 3 years ago, she said. 3 years ago on the anniversary of the murders, one of the figurines, well, myself and the artist Joey Moss, who was here for the anniversary, there was an event here and everybody had left. At 12:20, he and I were in the exact same position. Joey was standing right in that door jar between the two rooms, and I was standing to his left, kitty corner to him, standing talking to him. We were basically at right angles to one another, and the figurine flew off the aquarium at him and landed, and the head popped off the large one. And I looked, I was right there, and I turned to my left right as it was happening. I said, oh my God. And it literally flew off the aquarium. So with the lights on, and it was just he and I, and there was no one else here, and there were no cameras at the time. So to me, the fact that, you know, he has this meltdown when that happens with the lights off, and he nothing compared to having this thing fly off the aquarium on its own with just two people and going, oh my God, and not being on an investigation.
There's people in the paranormal, both well-known and not well-known, that tend to do that sometimes. They just jump straight off into flying off the hoop and freaking out rather than, like you said, using deductive reasoning behind it. And
About it and being calm and rational and saying, hey, wait a second, that just happened. That is so cool. can you do it again? That's the first response I had is, hey, I love that. Please do it again. Please, 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 please. No. Ghost. Hey, Casper's here. Look over this way. Look and check this out, dudes. Casper's here. Not ghost. Come on. Some freaking paranormal professional putz. Maybe, but certainly not professional, you know, anything I can think of seriously. So
I'd have dove straight into it. If I see something fly off of a shelf and fly at my head, I sit back down and do exactly what you said. You know, that's really cool. Do it again. Show me something else, will you? Let me know you're here. Anything, because that's really what you're there for.
I've had them turn on I've had them turn on the faucets upstairs in my bathroom, and I was like, "Well, okay, that's cool." I said, "No," I said, "Can you do it again?" I said, "But to be honest, you said try something different." I said, "We really can't have any kind of wasted water." I said, "We're going through a drought right now. This isn't the time to do that kind of stuff." I said, "Anything that's not water related. Don't flush the toilets a few times, you know, unless you pee, and then you have to. That's okay. I don't want to come in and say, I haven't used this John, and what the hell is that?" I said, "God, really, guys? Flush if you're going to use it. No ghost turds." You know, I mean, people laughing and say, "You serious?" And it's like, yeah. I get a kick out of it. They've done it three times in 16 years I've been here. They've turned the water on for three different people, myself included. So to me, I just get a kick out of it. I don't, you know, go, "Oh my God, I have yet to see a bloody, you know, a bloody turd in the toilet." Then I'll be like, "All right, spirits, you're at it again? Somebody needs to go to the ghost doctor. The witch
took
doctor
it a little too far that time, guys."
Yeah, you got a problem there. There's a, you know, the cat took a toilet. Really, the cat used the toilet. Okay.
Well,
like
after
that.
A while, you very get used funny to it. I know that when I was in my home for years, I'd have windows open and closed, doors open and closed, faucets turn on and off, lights turn on and off, dimmers go up, dimmers go down.
Oh, yeah. Even have that shit. Televisions go on and off, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it becomes second nature. You don't even worry about it anymore after a certain point. You just start talking back. Like, "All right, I get it. You're here."
Yeah, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, to be frank and honest with you. I've yet to see anything that bothers me at all with it, so.
Well,
I love it. I think it's interesting as hell.
Yeah, and a lot of people assume, and that's that. Media has done two things. It opened up the paranormal to a lot of people that viewed it, and that was great for the first number of years. But then it's kind of taken a twist to a little bit more of a negative assumption on the way the spirit world and the ghost world and investigation works. And that's a part of what I'm trying to express in my project, and several other people that are going to be on TV are going to be expressing here in the next couple of years, is showing people more of that reality, more of the truth, as opposed to the nonsense we've been seeing for the past 15 years.
Right. Well, what else is new? You know, that's all we have is the nonsense here about, you know, this, the paranormal. I find it kind of boring and let's just say boring. It just, you know,
it can
just
be. It can be incredibly boring. In fact, my documentary, I don't expect to go very far, but.
Well, what I mean is I'm bored with just bored with it, with the way people perceive it and have partaken in it, have created it to be such a hype-driven module of dreck. It's great if you want to say that, but here's the example. The Winchester House. A total fabrication of Hollywood, and people still believe that the place, and it was really, as I look at it, as nothing more than a, an infomercial for the place that's there now, for what it's turned into, a carnival circus sideshow, roadside attraction, which it really was just that, but now it's become a paranormal circus sideshow attraction, and it's all in the name of making more money. For the place, I'm sure you don't think that any of the half the crap they wrote in that story is real. That was all exploitive of Sarah Winchester's story. I was there 30 years ago, and I was like, "All right, there's some lingering spirits here, but nothing to the extent that at that time it wasn't even billed as haunted. It was just billed as the Winchester Mystery House. a roadside attraction, really, that was just purchased by a Japanese corporation, and they were running it and turning it into a haunted establishment. And I was like, wow, really? And the prices started to raise up as well. That's the whole thing. It became a marketing tool.
Well, a lot of the paranormal has done that. A lot of locations. And when I say this, listeners and audience, don't think that I'm downtrending any of the haunted locations. I've been to quite a few fascinating places here in the past year, and I'm going to quite a few more. But the paranormal, everybody should understand that it is – and I just had this discussion actually a little while ago too. In a lot of ways, it has become a mainstream business, and a lot of that is exactly what you're saying.
It is a business. Period. Don't say it. It has become. It's a huge business, a multi-million-dollar business. And God rest his soul, Harry Houdini looks upon this situation with scathing commentary, saying you guys are all being winked and hoodwinked.
Because he'd be rolling his head.
Yes, because his spirits come through to me many times here at the house and saying, this one's a fraud, this one's a this. And he said to me, he goes, think about how many of these people on television. I'm talking about the Amy Allens. I'm talking about a load of those professional sensitives that are on TV on all these shows. Ask me something. How many of those people have reached out to me on their own to come here to see the house and have followed through with it?
Probably very few.
I'll tell you the names of those who have visited here, and then I'll tell you the list of people I've reached out to who have not followed through in person as well as on email or whatever. Marianne Winkowski, the original ghost whisperer, she actually and I conversed when she was over in Universal City. She couldn't come out because she was working on the show Ghost Whisperer, and she was out on a tight schedule. But she and I met over there, and we talked about the house. And she goes, I don't have to come out there. I understand what's going on. But she expressed plenty of interest in doing so. Christopher Fleming, obviously, was here with Ghost Hunters and then actually came out here several times after. Lisa Williams, the paranormal investigator from the UK, the sensitive, the psychic, she came out here on her own after Ghost Hunters showed up, and she called or emailed and said, I want to see your house. And I said, really? I said, not with your show. And she goes, no, I want to. I said, fine, come out here, bring yourself and your associate, whatever, and we'll go through the house. James Von Prague came out here. He had a hell of a time here, had some fun. Obviously the shows, Zach Bagans, Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, Jason and Grant. Trying to think of whom else. Josh Gates from Jason Gates from the Haunted Collector has been here several times. Dana Workman from Haunted Highway has been here. Trying to think of who, of course, Kane Hodder, Rick McCallum, and R.A. Mihailoha from the Hollywood Ghost Hunters have been here, and have been here several times. Big names outside of that, that's about it. I've been in contact with Amy Allen. I've been in touch with Josh Gates and Joe Rogan. In literally either by email and correspondence, or personally, like Josh Gates, I've invited him several times in person. Never once on those people I just mentioned have ever followed through to come up here to the house. Amy Allen sure wanted to do a thing on my house, a special, and I just said, I don't really think so. I just don't think I'm going to give you my house for 4 days and you guys run rampant in here. I said, and I'm not going to be out of the house for 4 days while you shoot here. I'm not interested in that. That's just not going to work. Their terms were just not worth it. And then, like I said, she dropped off the face of the earth and never expressed. And again, my thought is, if you're staring at, say you're a gemologist, and that's a person who's interested in the study of rocks and stones and gems. And you have a chance to go see the Hope Diamond in person and check it out and actually go and touch it and do what most people don't get the chance to do. And you're offered the opportunity. And a lot of people I can already hear, your house isn't the Hope Diamond. Well, let me put it this way. insofar as the recorded, documented scientific evidence that's been reported and documented here at my house by more than one individual, that would be Barry Taff and other scientists that have been here, it's pretty much one of the places that's on the list of top 10, if not in the top 5 haunted locations on the planet.
I would do it in a heartbeat and have every intention of at least stopping in once I get to California.
And I'm not saying this because it's like I'm not like the Winchester House. I do not have the house open for business. I do not have any ghost tours in here. I haven't had any since last August, and I haven't had any since. And I don't have any plans.
We will wrap you up here, David. I apologize for cutting you off, but I know we got to get the next host on here. And you're always welcome to come back on. But you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. It's been a wonderful conversation with David Ullman this evening. And we will obviously have you on many, many times. But we will let you off here. As you learn every week, everybody, and the paranormal truth should always be that reality. As you heard from David tonight, that's obviously very, very important to the people that are in the paranormal, those homeowners and so forth. We certainly appreciate you coming in, David, and we'll talk to you next week.
YouTube.com/David Ullman. Thanks. Bye.